Blog Talk Radio.
BlogTalkRadio.com here on this Tuesday night, September the 20th, 2011, 8:01 here in Chicago. And that music was a little bit apropos tonight, Superstar.
It is.
We will be tonight here, you know, at the Third Man In, BuckShatter.com. We will be your official internet companion for the live ChicagoBlackhawks.com exhibition games week. I'm sure they're thrilled, or they will be thrilled when they hear that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm getting an email in the morning.
Better you than me.
All right. Superstar, I got to talk to you in a second. We're going to do a lot of stuff here on the show tonight. I don't know exactly what any of that is. This isn't going to be necessarily the most prepared show. One of the things that we want to do tonight is talk about the big storylines this coming season. We talked about this last year. Last year we did a show, if you were with us, calendar year ago at this time, which basically is taking a look and want to look past, oh, well, the Hawks have to stay healthy. Well, yeah, dumb idiot. That's close enough to us. We want to look past, you know, deeper storylines that we want to look at during going into the season that we think are key in determining the Blackhawks' ultimate success, which could be, and I think most people would hope to be, a Stanley Cup. So we're going to take a look at that later on tonight. Also, we want to talk about the training camp festival. Training camp got underway this past weekend, so we want to talk about that. And then also, I didn't get to talk much, if at all, about last weekend, about 10 days ago, the training camp festival. But first of all, Superstar, it's been a long time since we spoke, and I've been reading up on you, and you're in the suburbs now. How are you doing, Superstar?
You know what? I have no idea what you're saying. You're very muffled. Yeah, it has been a long time though, so it's good to be back. You know, new location, moved out to the suburbs, and got a minivan, and no, I don't have kids, but I figure that's not far behind.
You're saying I'm muffled?
You were, yes. That's much better.
Okay. All right, because I can jump on the other input if necessary, and I may do that. I'm going to ask you to talk for a little while. I haven't talked to you in ages.
I know. I was thinking about this the other day, and not just via the show, just in general. It seems like I haven't talked to you in ever. See, but that's what happens when you're friends with Chris Watts. You move out of the city and back to the suburbs, and you never hear from him again.
You're not the first one to experience that.
No, and I probably won't be the last. But, yeah, it's if you want to stay connected to Chris Block, live in the city. Because if you don't live in the city, you're done.
I was reading up on you. You moved to the suburbs. You're enjoying the Metro line and meatloaf dinners.
Meatloaf dinners. Now, we haven't got to the meatloaf yet, but I don't know where that came from. But, yes, my 3-minute commute to work is now an hour door to door, which still, you know, I'm not going to complain about because there's, I'm sure, plenty of people listening who have a lot longer commute than I do. But that's the price you pay for home ownership, I guess.
All right, so everything else is fine then? That we're all caught up? We're good?
Yeah, I think so. I don't got anything else.
All right. You know, people come up, you know, I mean, occasionally. It's not like it happened today. But people come up to me and they ask me, like, yeah, you know, how's Superstar doing? What's going on with Superstar? And people, I don't think people realize, like, I don't really talk to you. I mean, we're friends and everything, but I just assume you're doing fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like we don't get along anymore. We're not friends anymore. It's just, you know, we've been busy.
That you know of.
Yeah, well, at least, you know, as far as I know. But, you know, summer gets busy for both of us. You know, it always seems that hockey brings us back together.
It's probably been since the summer that I talked to you. I last saw you in July.
Yeah, Jesus, it's been that long, huh?
How was your summer?
It was good. It was, you know, busy moving and, you know, weddings and funerals and more weddings and more funerals. And, you know, so, moving's a bitch, so, you know, that takes forever. How about you? What have you been up to?
I was afraid you were going to ask.
You knew it was coming.
Yeah. Horrible. But that's my problem. We're going to have some fun here on the show tonight. The game's about to start. I don't know. Do you have the stream in front of you, Superstar?
I do not. I'm frantically looking for this game on Blackhawk TV, and I cannot find it.
Yeah, well, I predicted that. Well, as the game gets started here, probably puck drop about right now, the lineup in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan tonight, Ray Emery is getting to start. He'll play about half the game, and then Alexander Salak will come in relief. I suppose if they get a chance to do it halfway through the game and it's the right time, they'll do that. Otherwise, Salak will just play with their good lineup tonight. Your only stats is defenseman AHL signee in roster, Brian Fahey. The defense looks like this. According to Lines, the beat writers, I took the lines that Jesse Rogers put up, so if these end up being wrong, blame me for believing in Jesse Rogers. Ryan Stanton and Nick Letty, which both guys were playing up in the roster last year, so they're on the fence. John Scott and Steve Montador, Joseph Lavin and Stanley Lepitzko. Up front, the starting line is Victor Salberg, Jonathan Faves, and Weston Olis.
You're muffled again.
All right, talk for a minute. I'm going to switch things.
All right. I have no idea what he says, but going into this game, I think the guy who I'm looking to really see is Sammy Lepisto and Steve Matador. Obviously, both guys new to the Hawks this year. Seeing how they'll contribute, obviously, with a preseason back end, but see how they kind of come in and kind of gel with this team. Obviously, first preseason game, not the everyday lineup. Most of these guys probably not making the team. So those are the two guys I'm really looking to find out, you know, more about them. As those are two guys that will be on the team that I don't know a whole lot about. Obviously, Monitor playing in the East. We didn't get a chance to see a whole lot of them, in person. But those are the guys I'm looking for. And obviously, the interesting dynamic of Jonathan and David Tate. See how that plays out.
I want to talk about that in a second. Am I good now, Superstar?
Much better.
Okay. Damn the board. All right, let's go through the lines again. Since Emery starts, Lock in relief. Ryan Stanton, Nick Letty, Jonathan Scott, and Steve Monitor, Joe Lavin, Samuel Lepesto. Those are your defensive pairings. Victor Stahlberg, Jonathan Taves, and Rusty Olesh. Marcus Kruger centering Brandon Saad and Ben Smith. Philip Deneau, first-round draft pick of the Blackhawks this summer, is between David Taves and Jimmy Hayes. And then Mark McNeil between Jamal Mayers and Kyle Beach. David Tays, you just talked about it. I think if anybody saw the practice game or the scrimmages on Saturday, David Tays is lucky he's even on the, you know, he's lucky he's even a part of this organization. He's probably an ECHLer at best, maybe a guy who will fill in at the AHL level at this point. Now, of course, he can move up. He can improve. He's got the name, so he'll get chances. But, you know, this is a kid that's taking ice. Listen to the list of players tonight that aren't getting a chance to play because the Blackhawks sent David Tays to Saskatoon. Brandon Bolig, Chris DiDomenico, Rob Flick, Byron Fryce, David Gilbert, Rob Klinkhammer, Peter LeBlanc, AHL contract, but he's in camp. Played for Rockford last year, former Blackhawks draft pick. Philip Paradis, who's injured right now. Brandon Peary, Andrew Shaw, and another AHL guy, Paul Zanette. But Paul Zanette's a kid who led the, you know, goals per game, led the NCAA last year at Niagara. Not getting an opportunity because David Tays is in Saskatoon tonight. It's one thing to do, you know, to do a marketing ploy. Because it's, you know, it's an easy story. It's the way to get the Blackhawks in the paper a little bit more prominently at this stage of September. You know, when everybody's interested in the Bears, nobody's given up on the Bears yet. You know, there's other guys that are more deserving of this than David Tays. If David Tays is in camp to win a contract, and that's what he is, the Blackhawks acquired his rights. He doesn't have a contract. He's here to win a job, win a contract, and stick with the organization, which I assume he will. I don't think they acquired David Tays to not put him somewhere. But he should be performing and being evaluated in scrimmages and practices, not taking valuable preseason time away from someone who deserves it more. And it bothers me that this is going on. When David Tays was acquired, he said in an interview in a story that ran in the Winnipeg Free Press that we linked on the thirdmanin.com, puckchatter.com, he said that Stan Bowman told him that they did not acquire him as a favor to Jonathan Tays, and that may be true. But why did they acquire him? If if you saw him it on Saturday, for the people that went there or watched it streaming on live, I didn't watch much of Saturday, but I saw enough of David Tays to affirm what I know of him and what the scouting reports say. This is a kid who couldn't get on the ice at North Dakota. And because of that, he took a risk and went back to the junior leagues. And he went to the Brandon Wheat Kings in a year that they were loading up for the Memorial Cup. They were loading up for that, and he took a risk because they had five or six overagers in camp, and they could only take three. So he took a risk by going there. He made the team. I'm sure he had an assurance that he would. But, he made the team, and he put up decent numbers, but he didn't put up great numbers. He's got a nice shot. He's decent up and down skating, but, you know, his moves, his reflexes and the way he reacts to the play is ECHL level, and there's no reason, and I'm sure he's going to go and score a goal tonight, and everybody's going to, you know, send me emails, but there's no reason he should be taking time away from guys who have earned it. He hasn't earned this opportunity, and it stinks. I'm not rooting against David Tays. I hope that he improves and he makes the AHL and the NHL. I'm not rooting against him. I'm just saying at this stage, it's wrong. I mean, that you're taking an opportunity away from somebody else. Last night, the Blackhawks send kids back to juniors. I would have preferred to see Ludwig Rundsfeld in this position. You know, and he got sent back to junior last night. And I understand it. I know what it is. I know why he's there. I know why he's in the lineup. It's just because the problem for me, that I have you know, said repeatedly now that the Blackhawks, one thing that you can say about them, you know, in the guys that they plucked off of Rockford's roster last year, it was that they rewarded guys who deserved the opportunity. And it was time and time again. The guys who earned the opportunity, when an opportunity, you know, arose. People talked about Jeff Tafe at the end of last season. Jeff Tafe was, you know, he wasn't as good early on in the season. And then there, you know, when he was hot, the Blackhawks weren't looking to bring someone up. Until that, you know, until the, you know, near the end of the season, they weren't looking to bring someone up. So, you know, he got the shortest straw. But they did that repeatedly last year. When the time came, they rewarded the guys who deserved it. And here you have a situation where you have a kid, God bless him, who doesn't deserve the opportunity and he's getting it. And I understand it, but I don't think it's right.
Well, you know, you talk about guys who deserve it, and you talk about him playing, you know, last year, the Brandon Wheat Kings. Looking at his stats from last year, 60 games, 20 goals, 28 assists, how do they compare in that league? Because you see a guy like Mark McNeil with 10 more games with 32 goals, 49 assists. So it sounds like, you know, while he didn't play bad 48 points in 60 games, you know, that's not awful, but in that league, that's probably what, right about average.
Well, it's average, and then the other thing you got to, you know, understand is the New York Islanders gave up David Tavares Rice for nothing. The New York Islanders, you know, a team that starved for talent at every level. And you know, I know some people are talking about the New York Islanders as being a possible. You know, including Kevin Allen, I was listening today on NHL Live. He was saying that the New York Islanders are one of his surprise teams, and you know, I don't know about that, but they definitely, things are looking up for the Islanders. But that doesn't mean that you know, that they can just throw prospects away. This is a kid that doesn't project high, you know, and all you have to do is watch him play. You know, and most people aren't going to care about this, and I know I'm in the minority here. Most people aren't going to care about it, but you know, it sends the wrong message, and I, like I said, I don't want to harp on it too much longer, but I just don't like it. Aside from the game tonight in Saskatoon, which the Players will fly back afterwards, the Blackhawks on Thursday night, the 22nd, are in Pittsburgh. That's a game that you can catch on WGN Radio. I don't know. One way or another, if that's televised somewhere where you can catch it, but that'll be on WGN Radio. Friday night, the next night, Washington Capitals at the United Center. 7 o'clock start, at least it says here in the press release.
Block, to give you the word, the Blackhawks Pens will actually be at the NHL Network on Thursday night.
Will it be blacked out locally, do you know?
You know what? According to the Blackhawks preseason schedule, TV networks is NHL Network US. So that's all it says.
Okay. All right. So Washington on Friday night, Sunday at Detroit at 4 o'clock. That game's on WGN. From that point forward, from Sunday forward, the four remaining Blackhawk preseason games are all on television. Sunday the 25th at Detroit. That's on GN. Wednesday the 28th, the Red Wings are in town. That's on Comcast. Friday the 30th against Pittsburgh. That's, again, on Comcast, 7:30. And then the finale on Sunday, October the 2nd, at Washington at 4 o'clock Chicago time. That's on WGN. So there's that. I should probably pull this up. First of all, Superstar, an announcement to make.
I love announcements.
We are the third man in Fantasy Hockey Leagues. I put this post up on the website last night, I believe. If you were in one of the two leagues last year, I sent out the invites, so you should have gotten them. If you haven't gotten them and you're listening to this and you were in our leagues last year, email me immediately so you don't lose your spot. I had to open up a third league. Because there was too much I mean, there's too much interest. At this point, we don't have three full leagues because there's a bunch of invites out that people haven't executed the, their sign-up yet. But we're going to have three full leagues. So if you're interested, you're listening, and you want to be in this and you want to, battle against Chris Block and even the superstar, send me an email and I'll get you out the invite and we'll be all set. The drafts are going to be, so to avoid confusion, all three drafts are going to be on Monday night, October the 3rd. So I'm going to be a busy boy that night.
No, that won't create confusion at all.
They're staggered. So, but yeah, Monday night, October 3rd, I was able to book all three live drafts. So that you'll be able to do a live interactive internet draft and with us on Monday night, October the 3rd, if you sign up. So again, there's that. Also want to say next week, tonight's our last show until next week. Block's got a lot to do. Block's got a lot of catching up to do. Next week, Monday night, at an hour later at 10 o'clock Eastern, 9 Central, and 7 Pacific. We don't really care about people in Denver. John Hoven of mayorsmanor.com. He's going to be the guest. If you remember, he was on last year talking about the LA Kings. John's got a great site, mayorsmanor.com. He's one of those bloggers who actually has access to the team. So there's a lot of great stuff, a lot of interviews that he does over there. So check that out. If you're an LA Kings fan, that should definitely be a destination point for you, mayorsmanor.com. John's going to be on the show for the entirety. We're gonna go through one of my favorite teams as well, the LA Kings, top to bottom, like we did last year. Prospects, Drew Doughty's contract negotiation. Hopefully that's wrapped up by the next week. So we'll take a look at that. And Monday the 26th, I'm looking at two different dates here. Maybe I said the wrong date before. But, yeah, Monday the 26th, that's mayorsmanor.com. The next night, we're going to do back-to-back nights. Sam Fells, Committed Indian, SecondCityHockey.com, and NBC's Madhouse Enforcer. Sam Fells, 8 o'clock Central. Of course, 9 Eastern and 6 Pacific. Sam Fells, September 27th, Tuesday night. And that'll probably be our last show until the next week. But tonight's show, 90, Superstar.
Wow, look at us go.
I think it's show 90. I hope it's show 90. Unless
yeah,
it's
you're
90.
Anxious.
Yeah, I want to get this thing over with. Yeah, it's show 90. I was confused because I wanted to do a show last week, but you were unavailable, and then I got unavailable. Okay, so there's that. And, of course, we're going to have a lot more shows before the season starts, a lot of people to talk to get ready for the season. Of course, I'm sure Al Samad, I don't have a date on Al, but Al Samad will be back before the season opens. And if Adam Summers is listening to this, the breakout hockey program, I haven't had a chance to email Adam, so I don't want to catch him off guard here, but breakouthockey.podomatic.com, his shows are back up and running as he's previewing the season. We want to get Adam on to talk about the Habs and also James Van Riemsdyk's Philadelphia Flyers. So if Adam's listening to this, make it easier on me and shoot me a note. Superstar, also, we're going to have to do our over-under bets. Do you remember who won last year's over-under bets?
I did. You think I remember if you won?
What if Dieter would have won? I mean, we're going to have to involve somebody else. Maybe we'll involve Sam. I don't know.
That could be a good one.
Or we could just get Dieter back. I'm sure Dieter's looking
for you. You can bring Dieter back. Well, you know, you bring them both back.
We could involve the entire blogosphere.
That might count for two shows.
Did you get the game up yet?
No, I was just about to ask you.
Well, I haven't tried, so. I tried off earlier, but then I started talking.
Yeah, no, it, if anybody who's listening to this live that found the game on Blackhawks.com, please give us a call. After we promise we'd be your internet.
Well, don't tell the people to call. I got to get the. There we go. Okay, now you can call. Now I'm looking at the switchboard.
We're a little rusty. It's been a while.
I want to talk about Stan Bowman. Did you read Adam Johns' piece on Stan Bowman the other day? It wasn't exactly the other day. I think it was last Friday, the 16th. But it's a great article. I'd suggest, it was a fantastic article, but there's specifically I want to talk about this comment by Stan Bowman in here. Let me find it. Okay, here we go. When thinking back to how Stan Bowman got the job back in July of 2009, prior to the Stanley Cup season, of course, superstar, everybody knows this, I would think. There was that controversy with the RFA offer or qualifying offers not being sent out on time.
Yeah, a little issue there.
See, now I lost my place. Any other thoughts on that while I find the quote?
No. It's very reminiscent. I believe the Bears did the same thing a few years before that, actually. So he needs to remind the GM they got to click the box. And then after you click the box, you actually have to send those offers out.
All right, here it is.
It's plus you for bringing this thing up and then not having your place.
I told you this was not going to be the right stuff. All right, here we go. Well, the thing about this article that Stan Bowman's praised for being this guy who has this amazing attention to detail. He takes copious notes during games. He's an avid book reader, and all this kind of stuff, right, in this article, okay? But then when Adam Johns gets to the qualifying offer sheet thing, which, I wrote about it at the time, Stan Bowman's bio in the media guide, his bio, his job, description, included, he oversaw contract paperwork. Filing paperwork, that is typically the job of the assistant GM. The GM thinks big picture, and his underlings work about, worry about that stuff, right? So I think I was probably one of the first that raised that issue. It says, wait a minute, how could we be blaming Dale Talon for something that if it was strictly somebody didn't send them out, they were done, it wasn't a hold up somewhere else, it wasn't Dale Talon trying to get approval from someone or it not getting back to Stan Bowman in time for him to send it out, if it was strictly a clerical error, where did the clerical error, error happen? It had to have happened in Stan Bowman's office, because that was his responsibility. So the question came up in this Adam Johns article, and this is Stan Bowman's quote about that and whose responsibility it was to send out the qualifying offers. Bowman's quote, "I don't remember how we divided it up at the time, truthfully."
Oh, Stan.
"There has been a lot mentioned about that, but in all sincerity, I think sometimes that was overblown. If you look back at the contracts that they signed, they were all market contracts." Now, that's going to anger people that are constantly bashing Dale Talon. So, I give Bowman credit for saying that as much. But to say, "I don't remember," I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's the whole way, whether it was his fault or not, it's the way that he got, it's the reason why he got, you know, his job. I mean, there were other reasons. I mean, the conflict, the professional conflict between Dale Talon and John McDonough. It was the way that Dale wanted to go about his business and the expectations that John McDonough had of everybody, not just Dale Talon. There were going to be no special exceptions, and Dale didn't want to adhere to that. There was a personality conflict there, and Dale was always going to be on the way out. And Stan fit the profile that John McDonough wanted working under him, how he wanted the process to be. So Dale was always a sitting duck. But in the end, after John McDonough allowed Dale Talon to run the draft and run free agency over there, even though he didn't really have much to do with that free agency, I don't think. But after all that, then the qualifying offer thing happens, and then they fire Dale Talon. But to say that you don't remember, you don't recall how, I mean, it's been the biggest story in the last 3 years, you know, inside that office, the biggest happening, and you're going to say you don't recall? Come on. What do they say on regular radio?
I'm not sure what you were looking for.
Who you crapping, man?
Who you crapping? That's right. Speaking of who you crapping, the Blackhawks Edmonton game is now streaming on Blackhawk TV. And in case you're wondering, the 50-50 pool there in Saskatchewan is up to $21,000. Seems really high for the game just to be starting.
21,000?
That's what it says.
A good night at the United Center is 8.
Yeah. Those wacky Canadians going nuts.
All right, well, thank you, Superstar. Now I have the game up. Now that the first period's almost over, I've got the game up. All right, Superstar, let's talk about these stories that we're keeping an eye on this year. I know you have some thoughts. Let's talk about key stories, the key storylines going into this season that we feel are going to be prominent ones to look at in determining the ultimate success of the Chicago Blackhawks in the 2011-12 season. Superstar, why don't you start off?
You know, I obviously, being an old goalie myself, immediately thought about the goaltending situation. Really top to bottom. I mean, I think the backup role is obviously going to be key. But, you know, we saw last year Corey Crawford obviously takes the load and kind of runs with it. And that was his job. And there was no 1-1-A like the Cup year. Phil Huet Niemi took the job from Huet and ran with it. You know, you got another kind of, once again, backup role battle. It'll be interesting to see, you know, Crawford, maybe a sophomore slump. You never know what could happen there. So, you know, I think overall the goaltending situation has a huge question mark on it. And I think it's no surprise, and it's pretty normal feeling that, you know, you're only going to go so far as your goaltending is going to take you. So I think that's a huge question mark that we're going to have to figure out here early in the year.
Okay.
Nothing.
Well, you know, I just think I'll repeat what I've said all summer long. I think to me, if we've seen this going on 3 years, you know, the starting goaltender at some point, if you look on almost every team, excuse me, cough button. If you look at almost every team, whoever the number one guy is, at some point during the season, he hits a rough patch. It happens to every goaltender. You know, he hits a rough patch and he struggles. And when that has happened, Joe Quenneville, throughout his career, tends to lose faith in that guy. And then if the backup comes in, because, you know, as we've talked about many times, when you're the backup, it's less pressure. And that's, I think that's a key looking at Corey Crawford this year. He's not a spring chicken, and he's been around a long time. I don't know that you could say, you know, he's going to have a sophomore slump. I don't think you could really call it a sophomore slump. I think what you're looking at for Crawford is, what changes for him mentally now that he knows that everything's on him? And, you know, part B of that is, if Ray Emery ends up being the backup, how does Corey Crawford handle the pressure of knowing there's a guy who was a Stanley Cup final goaltender, albeit 2007 and a hip surgery ago, was a Stanley Cup final goaltender, a guy who has a nice pedigree, and Joe Quenneville won't be slow to turn to if Corey Crawford starts to struggle. How does Corey Crawford handle that? I don't know. I don't dare to say. But that's key. But also, if that does happen, if Corey Crawford struggles and the backup comes in, I think if it's Emery, then I think you're going to see a lot of Emery. If it's Salah, he's going to have to be great. And then at that point, you know, if we have another one of these things, you know, with Niemi or Crawford last year, where they come in and they're dynamite, and Joe Quenneville just starts rolling with the hot hand, if they have to go back to Crawford, will he be the same guy? I think that's what, you know, I would add to what you said, and what I would look for from the goaltending position. For me, I'll start actually with my number two. As far as key things to look at this year, I think we're already looking at this now as we head into the season where, I mean, there aren't big things because Patrick Kane is already skating. He'll probably get in 2-3 exhibition games. Patrick Sharp with the emergency appendectomy, he's going to be fine, but you have a situation with Sharp in that he's going to start the season basically without much of a training camp. You know, so he'll sort of be behind speed. And, you know, who knows what Kane will be like. But, you know, it's kind of like you worry that that's a precursor of things to come, because you already know that inevitably Dave Bolin's going to get hurt and he's going to be out. History would tell you. Marian Hossa will miss some time. Are we talking about 30, 40 games? No, but he's going to miss some time. What I'm talking about here is, I think it's imperative. The Blackhawks have the cap space this year. They have the flexibility. You know, they can bring up anybody they want from Rockford. I think this year a key thing to look at, and I think is essential when you look at this year's Blackhawks team and how good they're going to be, I think it's essential that whoever comes up for the minors, whenever they're called upon, whether it's if Ben Smith ends up there, if Marcus Kruger ends up there, if it's Brandon Peary that gets a call, if it's Klinkhammer that gets a call, if Jeremy Morin gets healthy enough to take contact again. We haven't talked about that tonight. If Jeremy Morin gets healthy enough to take contact again and gets himself straight and starts playing the way he was before he got injured last year, if he gets called up, it's imperative that these guys come up and they contribute right away, that they're like Ben Smith last year. That's what I'm talking about. Guys that come up and they contribute, and, you know, they're not guys that have to be protected in the lineup. I think that's essential. Because the fifth guy I'd be concerned about is Jonathan Toews. I worry about the amount of stress and the responsibility that's going to be on his shoulders this year up front, because the Blackhawks did not get bigger up front. Not in guys that are going to be playing the heavy minutes. Will Daniel Carcillo play big? Possibly, but he's not big, and he's not going to get first and second line minutes. Not with any, you know, a game here and a game there, you know, as sort of a energy spark or just to change the look of the team. But over the long run, no. Jamal Mayers is a fourth line guy. So, I mean, up front, you're looking, you know, I mean, you're going to need Olesh, you're going to need Bickle to be that physical presence up front. I think Jonathan Toews is going to, you know, he's going to take some of that on his shoulders too. And I think I just look at the physical stress of a guy that already busts his ass, one, you know, all the hyperbole all year long. I would be concerned about his durability this year. And who's going to be that center? Is it going to be Brandon Peary? Is it going to be Kruger? Who's going to be that center that comes up from the minors? Who are going to be those scorers that come up from the minors and help the Blackhawks bridge a gap until their guys that are missing inevitably from the lineup, whether it be for two games, whether it be stretches of 5 games or 3 weeks, help the Blackhawks bridge that gap? Because I think the West is going to be that tight this year. I don't think the Blackhawks are going to struggle again in the playoffs, but if they have troubles with injuries and these guys that come up for the minors can't help, they could very well struggle to make the playoffs. So I think that that's a key thing to look at. I think that's a key development over the course of the season that you can watch, and you'll be able to gauge whether or not this team ultimately makes the playoffs, is in a good position. They're not having to beat the number one seed or number two seed even. And, you know, can get back to where they want to be, which is challenging for the team. What's your other one?
You know, you bring up a great point with Jonathan Toews. And obviously the injuries starting off, you know, Kane will probably be there for opening day. You got Sharp missing for a few weeks. Jonathan Toews traditionally starts very slow. And you know he's going to be asked to even carry more of the load with those guys out. So that's a very good point as far as the amount of stress and workload that's going to be on his shoulders early. And I think that early portion of the schedule, you know, we talked about last year, by the circus trip in mid-November, that's pretty much where we figure out what this team is. Well, it sounds crazy, but that circus trip isn't that far off. I mean, it comes up pretty quick over the course of a year. So we're going to find out what this team is made of really quickly. And that leads to my next point, and that's the overall chemistry and depth of this team. A lot of new moving parts, a lot of changes, a lot of comings and goings. Seeing how this team was even early on, with a couple of your main cogs out of the lineup, seeing how this team is going to gel overall going into the first, second part of the year, that's going to be a huge thing because we're going to need to figure out what this team really is soon.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to look at. I mean, you look at the roster, and right now the only line that seems set in stone is a line that had 4 games of success during the playoffs last year. Dave Bolin, Michael Frolik on the right side, and Brian Bickell on the left side. That's really the only line that you could look at right now and say, well, that's going to be, you know, that's a line. And you would think if they're all healthy and that's the line that begins the season, that's a line you think you can count on. You know, for whatever you can count on from that line. You got Brian Bickell who's in the paper talking about my shot. How about you just take that puck with the net, you know, with you to the net and increase your odds of scoring, Brian Bickell. Frolik, being a second and third tier score guy, I like him in that role on the third line. Dave Bolin, if Dave Bolin can be the guy that shows up for the playoffs, you know, not the guy who disappears and you don't see him even when he's in the lineup for stretches during the regular season. The Dave Bolin, when he's on, you love that Dave Bolin. And you need more of that guy. You know, especially with Sharp starting behind a few steps coming into the season. And, you know, you would love to see Joe Quenneville put Hossa and Toews together. So there's a little bit more like what I just talked about with the stress that's on Toews. If Hossa's on that line, Hossa can, you know, he can do more physically than Patrick Kane can, or if Stahlberg gets a chance on that first line, or if it's Olesh that gets a chance on that first line, or even if it's Brunette. Brunette's slow. He's not going to be the first guy to get to a puck. Toews and Hossa are. So you want somebody who can win physical battles that, you know, is going to be the first guy to a puck. And if it's Toews between Kane and Brunette, it's going to be Toews that's going to have to win a lot of those physical battles. And that's why we talked about before. I worry about that. If that ends up being a line, I don't like that. I'd rather see Kane and Sharp together because they have tremendous chemistry, and Kane is the puck distributor on any line he plays on. So that that works in Sharp's favor, that works to his strength as a sniper. And, you know, you just got to find someone defensively reliable, you know, to play on that left wing. And Hossa and Taves together and put whoever you want on the left side. And I think that you roll with that and you try to get some chemistry early. The fourth line is the fourth line. And, yeah, I mean chemistry is key early. And, you know, even those guys on the defense, you talk about Sammy Lopisto and Sean O'Donnell. It's who's going to be in the lineup there? Nick Leddy's going to be in the lineup. Steve Monitor is going to be in the lineup. So if everybody's healthy, it's one of those two guys. Who gets in the lineup? Who do they play with? And how quick do they gel? Because, I mean that's another thing. It's not enough that those guys were acquired and you point to them and say, okay, now we have some depth. I mean, they have to jump right in and instill confidence in Joe Quenneville to throw them out there in all sorts of different situations. If Nick Leddy starts slow, then that means more minutes for Seabrook and Keith. If Sammy Lopisto or Sean O'Donnell get off to a slow start and they struggle, that means more minutes for Seabrook and Keith, and you're right back in the situation you started. So I think that's another key. It's whoever gets in that lineup, and if they're switching off, they come in and they give you quality minutes, so they are getting the PK time that you were promised. They are skating, you know, regularly as a third pair to help take some of those minutes away from those other guys. Nick Leddy can play a shift on the power play, you know, if not Steve Monitor. So you're not relying so heavily on Keith and Seabrook. And maybe you can keep Seabrook and Keith together so you can have a cohesive three pairs of D rolling through the lineup. That would be nice as well. But, yeah, I think chemistry early on, because the Blackhawks want to get off to – they don't want to get off to an average start. You want to get off to a great start. I think they, you know, through mid-November last year, they had won one more game than they'd lost. That can't happen this year. They need to be far ahead of the game. You want to start off quick, start off hot, and not be going on the circus trip looking for, you know, be in a situation where you have to win four games, four, you know, or get points in five of six. You don't want to do that. So, yeah, that's definitely a thing to watch early on. First period is over in Edmonton. There's no score.
Hey,
I didn't see much of anything.
I didn't. No, nothing really struck me. Blackhawks had a power play, a couple chances, nothing of significance. But, you know, I wanted to bring up another point, and I think it'll be another key, and it's a challenging thing, and that's the coaching staff kind of relaying the message of having a sense of urgency early. It's such a long season, and you look back to those, to the day of those two Edmonton games at home, you know, I think the sense of urgency and not giving away points early in the year is going to be huge.
Right, and also New Jersey came into town, sandwiched in between those two games. New Jersey came into town at the point where they were the worst team in hockey in the NHL, and Blackhawks lost that game as well.
Yeah, so, but, you know, it's easier said than done. I mean, how do you – with a season as long as it is and the grind that they go through, you know, being able to keep that sense of urgency night in and night out isn't a real easy thing to do, but I think that's going to be a real key.
Well, it's a good point. It's a good point, and I think one we could kind of analyze a bit. Early on in the season, Joe Quenneville seemed to be, just reading everybody's mannerisms, Joe Quenneville and his staff seemed to be on those guys about playing better, paying more attention to their assignments, just, you know, being more prepared and more focused. And but for whatever reason, and, you know, long summer, you know, guys just thinking things were going to fall back into place and be easier than they were, whatever it was. The guys just didn't have the energy. You could tell. Some nights they just weren't there. But it seemed like the coaching staff was on top of that. They were just failing to, you know, to sort of get through. And then if you fast forward to like the middle of the season, when I'm talking about January, February, when, you know, people were starting to look at the standings and get concerned that the Blackhawks were on the outside looking in, or they were for a lot of the season because they had played more games than you know, in the middle portion of the season, they played more games than other teams. People were looking at the standing and say, well, you know, the Hawks are in fourth or fifth place, but yeah, if you prorate those numbers, they're actually in eighth place or a ninth place or a tenth place team. There was a lot of that going on, and it seemed like, anyhow, it seemed like, you know, if you go back and look at Joe Quenneville playing with his lines and you know, he's got all these wacky defensive pairings, it just didn't seem like those guys were focused on winning hockey games. They were experimenting. And, you know, so sort of later on in the season, I think the coaching staff failed the team in not, you know, sort of losing that focus themselves of winning every point. At least that's what it looked from the outside looking in, with the way that Joe Quenneville was handling his team. The one constant all year, you know, from Thanksgiving on was Corey Crawford. But it seemed like the team had energy once Crawford came into the lineup, and maybe the bench, you know, the coaches lacked some of that. Maybe they were weary by that time. And then everything got, you know, a little bit straightened out there towards the end, enough that they could get back into the playoffs. And then, you know, I mean, what happened to the playoffs is what happened. You know, they got run out of the building for three games. They got scared. They got the, you know, they got the reality check. And they got back into it. But, you know, it's starting off quick, and I think they understand that this time around. So if they don't, you know, if they don't start off quick this year, I think it's going to be because they're outplayed. I don't think it's going to be, oh, well, the guys aren't into it, they're not focused, anything like that. No, I mean, they've talked about it, you know, since the Hawks convention. These guys are ready, they're excited, they're prepared, they're coming in. I mean, all they're doing, it seems like, in these so far in training camp is scrimmaging. So I don't know what the coach staff is doing. But, you know, I mean, they have too many guys, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, they should come in, they'll be prepared, they'll be focused, energized. And if they lose games in October, that you look at, you know, you look at it on paper and you say, they shouldn't be losing these games, I think you need to take a look. And I think Stan Bowman will need to react a lot quicker than he did last year. Because the focus and the energy should be there early on this year, and there's no excuses aside from what you said about turnover and chemistry. But the Hawks have way more talent than most, you know, maybe six or seven other teams in the league. So they should be in that range all year long, aside from, you know, outside of, you know, catastrophic injuries.
I agree. It'll be interesting to see.
All right, my other big key. Most important guy on the Blackhawks this year, without question to me, I know a lot of people are probably to name another guy in lieu of Brian Campbell being gone, but I'm going to give that kid a break. Most important guy on the Blackhawks this year, without question, Nicklas Hjalmarsson. You know, I've talked about before, Steve Mondador is coming in. Maybe, you know, with that contract that he signed, he might come in, and he may, in fact, get second-pairing minutes early on. You know, he may, in fact, do that as they maybe ease Nick Leddy up to 20 minutes a night. Maybe that's a good idea. But ultimately, Steve Mondador is going to be in that third pair position. That's where he's comfortable. That's where he should be. I mean, maybe he's playing second pair on the Winnipeg Jets or, you know, the Anaheim Ducks or some of these other teams. But on a team the caliber of the Blackhawks, he should be on your third pair. And Nicklas Hjalmarsson, it's imperative that his passes become crisper, you know, that he's making softer, more, you know, he's making an advancement from being a guy who just makes the safest play to one of the Blackhawks defensemen who can actually make a pass through the neutral zone, tape to tape, and spring guys. He has to make that advancement in the offensive sense of the game, and he has to be a shutdown defenseman. If Duncan Keith or Brent Seabrook go down, the Blackhawks improve their overall depth, but, you know, losing Brian Campbell is still a big deal. Because if Duncan Keith went down, you still had Brian Campbell who could move the puck at an elite level for you. If Duncan Keith goes down this year, now you have nobody who can move the puck at that kind of, you know, that kind of pace, that kind of level, with that kind of skill. So what you'll need at that point is strength and numbers. And if Nicholas Hjalmarsson can make that advancement to where he's making more skillful plays, he's smarter, smoother, more confident. I think confidence is a big issue with him offensively. I think the Blackhawks are primed to go to another Stanley Cup. I think a lot of it rests on his shoulders. As far as being the Hawks are not going to get there. If you look around the league and you look at the top contenders, the Hawks won't get there if they're still relying all the important minutes on Seabrook and Keith. And I don't think the answer. I know that, you know, the team got themselves turned around a little bit last year when Leddy got put with Duncan Keith, and a lot of people will point to that, but I think that was happenstance. I think that was at a point where Duncan Keith sort of got his head together and turned things around for himself personally. I think, you know, some of that had to do with he realized who he was skating next to, and he had to straighten himself up. You know, he had to raise his level. But I don't think that's splitting Keith and Seabrook. I don't think with the way that everything is structured on this defense, I don't think that's your answer. You know, what are you going to do, put Monitor and Keith together? Monitor can't skate 27 minutes a night. He just can't. You know, you're way overextending him. And I don't think, you talk about chemistry, I don't think that the answer is rotating these guys in and out where, you know, guys aren't playing together, especially early on in the season. You can get away with that in February and March. But early on, you want guys, you know, learning each other's tendencies. And, you know, you want four guys up front on top that can carry the load. You want Nicholas Hjalmarsson to be a guy who you can throw out there in all kinds of shutdown positions. You know, and he's already kind of in that role, but he needs to excel in it. And I think if Hjalmarsson takes the, you know, it's not a drastic step for him, but if he absolutely cannot fall back. If Hjalmarsson falls back, you're in big trouble. But if he advances, he helps Nick Leddy, who ultimately he'll be skating next to, and he takes some of that pressure off Duncan Keith, because then you can have in shutdown situations against you know, whomever, if it's the Sedins, if it's Datsyuk, you can have Hjalmarsson out there too, and Joe Quenneville can strategically put Seabrook and Keith out there, not just in playing against everybody else's top line, but you can also strategically move them around and get them out there in offensive situations to take advantage of matchups. Last year, Joe Quenneville was matching up defensively instead of matching up, you know, in attack mode. And you want to get him in attack mode. And I think if Hjalmarsson steps up and becomes the defenseman that, you know, guys like Scotty Bowman have projected him to be, then Joe Quenneville can get in attack mode. And I think that's key to that defense that I don't think is that much better. It might be worse. You know, you're taking a gamble on a 40-year-old defenseman. He's a part-timer, but he's a 40-year-old defenseman. Samuel Lopesto, you know, I've talked to people who are there this weekend who are sound hockey minds that I trust their opinion, and first impressions of Lopesto, you know, that was across the board. John Scott, not an NHL defenseman. You know, Sean O'Donnell, okay, but again, 40-year-old defenseman. How much time is he going to log? What is he going to be able to contribute? And if, you know, I think Nick Leddy in the long run is going to be a fine NHL defenseman. But if, you know, if he can't lug 20 minutes a night by January and be effective and not have to be protected, you know, and not be a liability, you know, you're not a better defense. So I think a lot of this rests on his shoulder. Now, of course, Duncan Keith has to be better than what he was last year. I think he will be. I expect him to. You know, is Seabrook in the first year of a contract going to start slow? You know, that's, I think that's another thing to look at. Does Seabrook start slow, and then does he begin to press? And if he's pressing, does that mean that, that he's making mistakes in the neutral zone? Is he pushing too much in his own end? You know, and does that then, if they're paired together, does that then adversely affect Keith? I think it's another thing to look at. I don't think so. I think Keith's going to be, I think Keith's going to get his game back up this year, and I think Seabrook will be fine. I think it all comes back to Jalmerson, because that's the guy. He's a veteran now. He's got enough experience, and he should be able to do this. And if he does, I think the Blackhawks are going to be sitting pretty come June. Or late May, at least.
You bring up a great point as far as protecting guys, protecting Letty, you know, with a solid, you know, partner. And without Campbell there, you know, you're almost giving Jalmerson that confidence. Okay, we're done protecting you. Now it's, you know, fly out of the nets or fall flat, you know, flat on your face. So, you know, we'll see. You brought up great points.
I like Jalmerson a lot. I like him a lot as a player. I always have. I'm just saying that, you know, I mean, this isn't asking a guy at Lopesto's level to play above his head. That's not what we're asking. We're asking a solid NHL defenseman, a solid second-pair guy with a Stanley Cup who's played important minutes for 3 years running. We're asking him to raise his game another level. You know, and I think that's – it's kind of like Dave Boland. I'll make this comparison. I think when Dave Boland plays – when Dave Boland is on his game, the Blackhawks forward lines are the Blackhawks offense, you know, the versatility that they have, the shutdown nature and the boost that Dave Boland gives the forward group when he's on top of his game and he's everything he can be, the Blackhawks are on another level. There's not a lot of teams that can touch that Blackhawks. Taves, Kane, Sharp, Osa, Boland on the shutdown line. If your energy line works out for you, if Frolik can do what he did, you know, in the playoffs, if Bickle can replicate his season, if you get your 20 goals from Brunette, and then you find whether it's Smith, Olesh, Stalbert, you get somebody else to be competent enough to play 82 games, there's not many teams in the league that can touch you. And I think going back and looking at the defense, if you've got Keith and Seabrook on the top of their games and Jalmerson bumps himself up into a guy who, you know, let's, you know, for the lack of a good comparison right now, but, you know, it's not a proper comparison, but a Nicholas Cronwall, a guy who last year took that step up and who now is, in a year is ready to be a top line, a number one defenseman for the Red Wings. I think that's slightly different players, but that's what we're talking about. We're talking about guys that have been around long enough, been around good hockey, good players, experienced enough. It's time for him to take a step up and be, you know, I don't want to say great, but, you know, be just below that to where, you know, you could say at that point, especially at his contract, you know, which right now maybe is a little bit of an overstatement or maybe it's just about right, 3.5 a year. But at that point, if he makes that step, you could then say, Nicholas Jalmerson, he's a part of our core. You can't touch him because he's that damn good. That's what I want to see out of Nicholas Jalmerson this year.
I agree. And incidentally, the Edmonton Oilers have taken a 1-0 lead and an early power play goal. And God, those wacky Canadians, this 50-50 pool is going to be 70,000 by the end of the game.
Right now it says 32.59. Is that the metric? Wait a minute, Superstar. Is this the metric system?
Dude, they're paying you out in loonies and toonies. I hope you have a pickup truck to put a couple thousand coins in the back seat of your car.
I think this 50-50 raffle might be more bullshit than the Blackhawks.
It's doesn't even look like a full building.
Speaking of not being a full building, over the weekend, Saturday on the 17th, the Blackhawks, you know, they sold out their $5 seat, you know, fan appreciation training camp festival, right? For the second year in a row, the place wasn't even close to full. Now, of course, you know, people see, this is the problem. You sell these tickets at $5 a pop because it's like, you know, people will just be like, yeah, I'll go to that. And then something comes up and it's like, ah, it's just $5. Forget about it. You know, so the Blackhawks collect your $5. They can say, yeah, sell out. Blackhawks fans are crazy, you know, and all this other, you know, bullshit, right? And then I think maybe I shouldn't be swearing tonight. But then you go to the building and the 300 level is half empty. Because people just discarded tickets. If what I would do, I think you could probably still sell the building out if they were $10 tickets. Now listen to me. If I was John McDonough, I would charge the Blackhawks fans more. Fuck them. Give me your money.
Maybe you won't get an email tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll get an email
with a job offer.
I honestly would though. So, because I think you could still sell the thing out, because I mean, what a lot of the people that are in that building on Saturday are just people who cannot afford tickets during the regular season, or they can only afford, a game or two, and this is an opportunity for them to cheaply bring their kids, just you know, kill an afternoon in September. You know, everybody's getting excited for Blackhawks. I think you could sell that building out if it was $10 a pop. And I think people who are like, you know, last minute, like, geez, maybe I don't want to go. Maybe they're not as apt to just say, screw it, you know, or they get rid of the tickets, you know, because instead of it being, well, you know, $10 is $10. And I don't know if there's surcharges or not. I didn't have to pay. But, you know, instead of it being $20 or, you know, if you bought four, now it's 40. And people are, you know, especially in this economy, people are stingy with their cash. So if they're giving up $40, they're more apt to go. And then it's more impressive. You know, instead you got the Blackhawks saying that it's sellout and they can't do a wide shot on the building.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I've just seen the little tidbits here and there. But, yeah, that's you're on to something there.
I'm on to something. Blackhawks fans, give me your money. Quick, somebody get that to John McDonough's desk. He won't think I'm so bad after all. I want to talk about Igor Makarov, superstar.
Okay.
First of all, Mike Peck, who was our guest last week, I don't know if you listened to it, superstar. It was a fantastic interview until the very end.
You can't even blame that one on me.
Yeah. Someone needed to put more quarters in block. Mike Peck talked about the, you know, the new boarding system that was going up in the building, and it had just began about, 8 days ago now. And, you know, Mike talked about hopefully it would be ready in time for the start of training camp, which is on the 25th, this coming Sunday. Well, it's not going to be. So they had to move the preseason game home opener, which was supposed to be at formerly the Metro Center, now the BMO Harris Bank Center, which was supposed to be Wednesday the 28th. That's not going to be at the Metro Center. Now it's going to be at a local ice arena. Go to icehawks.com if you want the information. I've got too many screens up in front of me. I'm afraid I'll lose the Blackhawks game that I'm not watching if I move screens. But they do have a game on the Saturday or the Sunday. They have a home game against Peoria. So that one hasn't been moved yet. So looks like it'll be ready in time. But Igor Makarov, you know, on August 17th, Makarov decides to stay in Russia. He claimed he was all set to come to Chicago and resume his North American hockey career when he got a phone call from St. Petersburg, SKA, the KHL team there, that he used to play for. couple years back. And they offered him a 3-year deal at much more guaranteed money, much more guaranteed money, not $1 million a year, but much more guaranteed money than he was going to be making in the AHL. Oilers just scored. Did you see that?
I did. Hell of a goal-wrister.
Is that Emery still in net?
I believe so, yes.
Not a good play by, Joseph Lavin there.
Makarov, Russia.
Thank you.
Anytime, buddy.
Makarov signs with Scott. And, he's making more than, the $63,000 a year he'd be making in Rockford. I criticize this move heavily because, if he's making $250, if he's making $300, even if he's making more in Russia, which I seriously doubt, and I'm going to give you the evidence why in a couple of minutes. But whatever he's making more than making Rockford. And I cannot, you make your money while you can in this business, and, you don't apologize for it. So I can't really knock him for that. But he signed a 3-year deal with Ska, basically ending any chance that he'll ever be an NHL player. I mean, giving up his all hope. He obviously had some sort of desire to be an NHL player, otherwise he would have never come, right? So ending, basically giving up on a chance at being an NHL player, being a superstar, being a hero in Russia, making potentially millions of dollars for the safe zone of being at home and making a good living now for the next 3 years, I didn't understand it. I think that Makarov, while he'd have to be in Rockford all this year, I think this was, we talked about it last year, I was not a fan of Makarov in the first half of last season, but he turned a corner and he finished strong. And I think this season, especially with as many new guys and Jeff Tafe and Ryan Poltoony and Hugh Jessamyn and all these guys now gone, was an opportunity there for Makarov, if he would have seen it, for him to come in and seize and play an integral role, play a big part in the Rockford IceHogs this year and be a go-to guy and become a scorer at the AHL level. He was already being groomed to be a two-way player, played a lot on the penalty kill. He's got enough offensive skill at that level to be a power play guy. This would have been a year where Igor Makarov would have come over and found out if he was going to be an NHL player. Would you only make 65, 60, whatever grand? Sure. But the money to be made in the long run far superseded what he got in the KHL. Far more. And the thing about it is, if Ska is sitting there with a 3-year contract for Igor Makarov in August, if he comes back to North America and has a good season, that contract's going to be there again next year. There's more money to be made in North America. There's more fame. It's a better lifestyle. All those things. He goes back to Russia. He gets his money. Fine. I really can't blame him. If he's homesick, whatever. But he went back to Russia for the money. But Ska's played 3 games so far in the KHL season. They're 3-0. They're actually goal differential-wise for 3 games. They're the best team in the KHL through 3 games. Some teams have played 5, but Ska's 3-0, 2 home wins, 1 on the road. Scored 11 goals, given up 3. Igor Makarov, game 1 on the road, 3-1 victory for Ska. Igor Makarov on the fourth line played 6 minutes and 16 seconds. 10 minutes less than he was playing in Rockford last year, towards the end of the season. Game 2, this past Saturday, in Moscow, well, it was Ska against Moscow. 4-1 Ska victory. Igor Makarov, fourth line, 8 minutes and 8 seconds. Last night, in St. Petersburg, against the Slovakian team, first year in the KHL. A Slovakian team that's got Luboš Barteško. And Blackhawks fans will remember Karel Pilaš. Chicago Wolves fans remember him, too. Pilaš was briefly a Blackhawk one preseason. They won that game 4-1. Igor Makarov, 6 minutes, 16 seconds first game, 8 minutes, 8 seconds second game. Game 3, fourth line, 6 minutes and 37 seconds. Great idea, Igor Makarov.
Yeah, no. No, that was – yeah, that might have been a bad decision on his part.
Stupid decision. Way to throw away any chance of having a career in hockey. On St. Petersburg, and there's a pecking order in Russia. If Makarov was getting paid big dollars, he'd be playing more minutes. He's not. Above him on the depth chart on St. Petersburg, and I talked about this the day he signed, Maxim Afinogenov, Peter Pruka, Fedor Fedorov. Who do you think is going to get ice time in Russia, Fedor Fedorov or Igor Makarov? Swedish players, among Ska's better players, Patrick Thorsson, Tony Martinson, Matthias Weinhandel, Evgeny Yarchukin, who's a Russian guy, former NHL player, played for Anaheim. All those guys before Makarov. On defense, Denis Grebushkov, Dmitry Kalinin, Vitaly Vishnevsky, Alexei Semenov. Excellent plan, Makarov. He's playing on the third line with a guy named Gleb Klimenko, or the fourth line, excuse me, Gleb Klimenko. And it doesn't even appear that they have a fourth line. Because he gets rare shifts, and it's usually one of the better players that drops down and plays with it. It's basically like the situation when John Scott was a forward. Scott's next game is Saturday night at home against Tractor. Darren Quint, former Blackhawk, on that team. Petri Kontiola, leading Tractor in scoring through 4 games, 1 goal, 2 assists, 17 minutes and 52 seconds of ice time per game. Igor Makarov is averaging 7. Jan Boulis, Michael Garnett, the old Wolves goaltender, and the other guy on Tractor, the young kid that was drafted 26 overall by Washington in the 2010 draft, Evgeny Kuznetsov, he's got 2 goals in 4 games for Tractor. So I knew that was a stupid thing for him to do at the time. You know, it's not like Makarov goes back to Russia and he's not good enough to play. I mean, he's probably just as good as some of these other guys. But it's a different situation over there. If he would have stayed here, he'd get more minutes. He'd play based on his play, based on his performance. And if he had a good year and he was still homesick, that contract still would have been there for him. And he may even have got more money, higher on the pecking order, and he actually would get ice time. He's a dumb kid. Turned 24 on Monday, but he's a dumb kid. What's going on in Saskatoon?
Blackhawks actually just got the lead 2-1 on a nice goal by I can't think of his name right now. Obviously the pitcher's not great. 85 on. Guy from Florida.
Oh, Olesh.
Olesh, yeah.
Nice little
shot, and they've actually just switched up. Edmonton and the Blackhawks have brought in the backup goalies. Well, backup is a loose term at this point, but made a line change in that both teams. So,
well, good for them. Well, before we get going here, I want to make a couple points. We mentioned it before. Mirko Hofflin, Ludwig Rensfeld, Mac Carruth, goaltender, also Johan Mattsson and Ken Sipson, the three junior goaltenders the Blackhawks had in training camp, all reassigned to their junior teams on Monday. Expect some cuts probably on maybe one or two cuts even tomorrow on Wednesday, but the big cut day is going to be Saturday because the Rockford IceHogs open their camp, as I mentioned before, on Sunday in Rockford, coincidentally. So the Blackhawks are going to be sending a bunch of guys to Rockford on Saturday, probably either before or after practice, but it's going to happen on Saturday. So that's the big cut-down day to look for. Of course, the top guys, whoever those shake out to be after these next two preseason games, after tonight and Pittsburgh and then Washington on Friday, the top guys will stick around, the ones that have earned it. But I think the marginal guys, the guys that – can't get in the lineup ahead of David Taves, and even your Rob Flick, your Andrew Shaw, your Paul Zanett, Boleg, Gilbert, Gilbert, Di Domenico. Should mention that Philip Parodi, terrible with names tonight. I don't believe he's practiced since getting injured in the rookie tournament, game one of the rookie tournament. So that's something to look out for. I know Dylan Olsen practiced today, and that's the first time since game one of the rookie tournament. So he's back on the ice. And Jeremy Morin is skating, and this isn't news, he has been skating, but he just can't take any contact. And that hasn't changed. I think he skated again today, I believe, but he didn't scrimmage. So they're taking things very, very slow with Morin, as they should. And, I was talking about this with someone the other day. I think the thing to look out for with Morin this year, the concern that I would have before anybody starts, kind of getting ahead of themselves, Morin's style, one of the things that he was praised for as a young kid coming up into the NHL last year is he was a fearless kid who had this reckless style, who would go into corners and battle and all that kind of stuff. Well, when you're a guy like him that got upended the way that he did, in open ice and is missed now, he's been out now 9 months. It's been 9 months since that injury occurred, and he's still not taking contact. I mean, that'll screw, no pun intended, with your head. So it's a big thing, I think, that you got to give him some slack, and allow him an opportunity to get himself healthy, and then gradually work this thing back in. If he's not going to be in a contact drill or a scrimmage situation this week, maybe he is, but whenever he does, I'm sure everybody's going to be told to kind of take it easy on him. And then, gradually work his way into full contact scrimmages, and then maybe an exhibition game before this is all said and done. And I mean, I don't even know that that's going to happen. But what I'm trying to say is it's very possible that the kid is going to have – he's going to be shy about being as loose and fearless as he was last time because you missed 9 months. You're where he was. I mean, they know the hype. They hear it. They know where they're at, where he was a kid that was on the cusp of being an NHL player. And there was actually a debate on the Blackhawks of whether or not to – burn a year on his entry and keep him in the NHL and not send him to junior or, bring him in, bring him back and burn the year after he got back from the junior tournament, the World Championship tournament. It was actually, that conversation actually happened, and you go from that to being injured in an AHL game and missing 9 months and now still being in limbo. I think there's going to be a big adjustment process for him. I think that, there really should be no expectation that he even plays in the NHL this year. And I'm not saying that he won't have the ability to. I'm just saying that there's going to be an adjustment in his game. I think he might have to slightly, you talk about adjustments, become maybe a more careful player. and that's a good thing. He was going to have to do that anyway. You know, if he would have made the jump to the NHL, what happened to him was going to happen eventually, because he was too careless. So I mean, he was going to get his lights knocked out eventually. And you know, so when I talked about last year of not wanting to rush him and not wanting, you know, let's just put him in Rockford and let him have success and learn all facets of the game, you know, go on the penalty kill, because it's, you know, while the AHL is kind of like a rat race down there sometimes in the way the game flows, he can learn, he can adapt, and he can have success and play in all different types of situations, and then bring him up so he's more heady when he gets to the NHL level. I think that's going to be the focus. Whenever he gets healthy and he's able to play in real games and you know, that's safe, and they're assured that he can do that, I think that's going to be the focus for him this year. I've always liked Jeremy Morin as a player. Obviously, after training camp last year, you like him more. But, you know, slow that expectation and just allow the kid to progress. And I think it's going to be a process. And we'll see. But that 50-50 raffle now is it's approaching 42,000 superstar.
It's ridiculous. And we've got to be, what, maybe 6-7 minutes ago in the second?
How many people do you think are in that building?
Twelve, 13,000 maybe?
Let's just say it's 15,000, you know, 14, 15,000. That means that each person in the building has given $3 already to this thing. I don't think that's possible.
No, I don't either.
And they have a live running count. I'm not buying this.
Hey, man, I'm just going what they're saying. I mean,
I don't know. Is there online, are people texting money and all that kind of crap?
There very well could be.
Maybe that's what it is. All right, Superstar. Monday night, September the 26th, I'll be back with, like I said, with John Hoven, mayorsmanor.com. An hour later, 10 Eastern, 9 Central, and 7 Pacific. And then the next night, our buddy, Sam Fells, secondcityhockey.com, the Committed Indian, and Madhouse Enforcer over at the NBC Chicago site. Sam Fells, 8 o'clock Central, on Tuesday night, September 27th. And that's about it, Superstar. Anything else you'd like to tell us?
No, I think it was a triumphant return for us. Obviously, glitches, which 90
Me,
shows
yeah.
in.
I don't know.
90 shows in, we've come to work around.
90 shows, that means I got 10 more to go before we cut this thing loose. I mean it. People think I'm joking. There's 10 more, and then the third man in radio is no more. I'm done with it. So people think I'm kidding. I'm not kidding. So 10 more to go.
Countdown has begun.
Will I see you anytime soon, Superstar?
Hopefully. We need to get together and have some beverages.
I've been in. I've been through your neck of the nape a few times lately. I've had to go out to Wheaton and a couple other places.
Well, you know, thanks for the call. You know, and when you stop by,
I'll try to do that next time. I know when I pop in, it's not always welcome.
Oh, you're always welcome, Block.
All right, Superstar. Enjoy the week.
But advance warning might be nice.
Enjoy the week. Thank you for joining me. It was nice to talk to you again, Superstar.
It was. It was good. We'll do it again soon.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. I hope we didn't annoy you too much while you're trying to watch the game. Holy crap. Who just scored?
Jamal Myers.
Yep. Kyle Beach, I believe, picked up an assist. What a night for the young kid. Mark McNeil might have won, too. Anyway, goodbye. Thanks for listening, everybody. ThirdManIn.com, blogtalkradio.com/TheThirdManIn, and puckchatter.com. That's it. Good night, everybody.
Baby!